Welcome to the Think Christian Podcast. My name is Josh Larson. If it's July in America, and it is, then the flags are waving. What does that mean for the American Christian? We're going to discuss on this episode, and because there's no such thing as secular, we'll look at the musical Hamilton and the recent run of Captain America comics to help us do it. Right at the top here, I want to acknowledge our Canadian listeners. Thank you for being a part of this U.S.-based show. We hope this conversation will still be helpful as you negotiate your own civil religious realities. Same goes for those listeners I know we have across the pond, even as far as Australia and New Zealand. In fact, I'd really love to hear what it looks like for Christians in those places. How do you think about your status as citizens of a country and people of faith? If you want to share your story, you can email me, tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net, and maybe we'll be able to share some of those thoughts on a future episode. Now, I can remember as a kid, around the 4th of July, the church I grew up in would plant this big American flag at the front of the sanctuary. To be clear, I've always been thankful to have been born in the United States. There's rich culture in this country. It's a land of vast beauty. But the older I get, the more I grow in my faith, the more I learn about America's history and really the contemporary implications of that history, I do wonder if it was such a good idea to put that flag quite so close to the cross. In his book, The Myth of a Christian Nation, Gregory Boyd writes this of American Christians: "Our allegiance to God tends to go hand in hand with our allegiance to country. Consequently, many Christians who take their faith seriously see themselves as the religious guardians of a Christian homeland. America, they believe, is a holy city set on a hill, and the church's job is to keep it shining." Well, and this is me again. In recent years, the eyes of many white Christians have been open to what our brothers and sisters of color have known for a long time, that America, for all its good things, is not a holy city, but really it's a historically unjust one. That its blessings, things like liberty, prosperity, pursuit of happiness, they've really only been afforded to a select few, and its laws are often designed to help keep it that way. For Christians, then maybe it would be more faithful to pursue what Boyd describes in his book as a vision of the kingdom of God. This isn't a nation state, but he writes, a way of living in the manner of Jesus, who didn't rule as Caesar ruled, but died on a cross. So all of this has been floating through my head as I watched the filmed performance of Hamilton on Disney Plus over the 4th of July, and as I've been reading the latest Captain America comics. Those are written by Ta-Nehisi Coates. How might both help us think about the land of the free and the home of the brave, and what it means to live as a Christian within it? Abby Olchesi and J.R. Forsteros are going to help me talk it out. Abby Olchesi is here with us. A belated happy 4th of July to you, Abby. Did you spend it, like a lot of people, watching the filmed version of Broadway's Hamilton? It did debut that weekend on Disney Plus.
Yes, I actually watched it a little bit earlier because I was watching it for a review for a different website. But yes, that did help my 4th of July weekend get kicked off well. I know my parents were watching it that weekend too.
Nice. Where else did you write about it? I haven't seen that. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I wrote a review of it for Crooked Marquee. I have a regular column over there on new streaming releases.
Very nice. So give us a tease of that. What did you think of Hamilton via Disney Plus?
I really liked it. I think I'm not alone in this. I, like a lot of people, had listened to the cast recording numerous times. I had it pretty much committed to memory, but I hadn't actually seen the musical itself, A, because it was not in the town where I lived, and also because it was prohibitively expensive to do so. So seeing it performed on stage, I think, added a whole lot of nuance and context to the different characters and songs that I hadn't been able to experience quite on the same level just by listening to it.
Yeah, it is the nuance that, as you might expect, the camera can pick up, right? So even if you did see it live, depending on where your seats were, of course, here was a chance when we did move in closer and actually get onto the stage next to the performers. You can see the sort of things that they're doing with their not only facial expressions, but really the gestures that is part of, there's the choreography in a musical like this, right? The cast choreography, the ensemble choreography that you can see from a distance and appreciate. But then within that, each performer has an opportunity, a freedom to do their own little touches. And someone like David Diggs, who just really took advantage of that as Jefferson, you could see adding a little flourish to every movement he had on stage was such a thrill. And you know what I like too, is that because this was just a filmed version of a live performance, we got to hear the audience. And that was just a nice way to feel more like you were in that room and getting the cues of response from them for things that were happening live. That was really exciting too. And just, you know, reiterated that this is a genius production, a really unique production, the way Lin-Manuel Miranda in his envisioning of it employed rap, hip hop, and then this diverse casting to really scramble our understanding of American history, the founding of the United States in some provocative ways. So I'd be curious to hear what you thought of that aspect of it, Abby. You know, how Hamilton relates as a work of art to the nation it's portraying. Is it something you find inspiring? Is it something you find critical? Would you call it patriotic? Would you call it treacherous? I think the musical has been called all of those things at one point or another.
For sure. The reactions to it have been varied from a lot of different corners, and I feel like a lot of the praise for it is warranted, as well as some of the criticisms for it. And I think that also very much reflects very specific points of view that you have about America,
sure,
about the way that it is. I think it's been said that its view of history and possibility and diversity feels really suited to the Obama era. And I think that that's probably somewhat correct. There's a lot of optimism there and a lot of, I think, patriotism in a very specific sense of kind of reclaiming the idea that in America, anybody can do anything and really showing what that means, not just in like a history book sense of looking at these white men who decided that they wanted to found their own country, to looking at the people that make that country up today, like a more accurate look at what American society actually looks like and how that American dream should be able to apply to everybody, regardless of gender or age or race or creed.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk about the criticisms that have come from multiple directions. And I'm thinking back to 2015 when Hamilton debuted, you know, some people were put off that this was a cast of non-white performers representing historically white figures. And people were unsettled by that, not as if it's the first time that's ever happened in theater. But, and then you look at now, 5 years later, in the last week or so, there have been criticisms by others for painting those figures too nicely. And I think in particular, people have pointed to the inflating of some of these founding fathers' abolitionist sympathies when many of them were slave owners, when they were owners of enslaved people themselves. So in some ways, the musical can't win. But I think if you take a step back from it, the debate, all of these debates kind of speak to Hamilton's value as a work of art that is challenging us to redream the American dream and really to ask what founding American values we truly value. And then again, ask how we're currently living. Does that reflect these values? The way the country is being run right now, does it reflect these values? And I see a clear religious corollary here, one that actually comes out of the Reformed tradition of which Think Christian is a part. There's this phrase that some people will probably be familiar with, reformed and always reforming. So it comes from the Latin semper reformanda, which does mean always reforming. And the idea here, at least theologically, is not that we're continually reinventing the wheel, right? Reinventing the theology, but that we're constantly returning to our orthodox beliefs as found in the Bible and then asking ourselves if where we're at now, is it aligned with those biblical principles? And so I think that is what Hamilton in its disruptive way is asking Americans to do, revisit these values that the nation's built upon. So things, you know, of all people being created equal, these unalienable rights that have been promised, and then asking if we're upholding them in both our personal and political lives. So for me, the two come together. Hamilton as a public project in a way, and also this idea of reformed and always reforming, so that when we see something adrift from the way we're called to live as Christians, that could be in ourselves, it could be in our church, it could be in our nation, then we have to reform things. Does that sound reasonable, or does that sound too revolutionary, Abby?
No, I think that sounds very reasonable. And I think that also speaks to the way that the musical was viewed when it first premiered and the way that its messages have become even more applicable since it premiered. So at the time, like I said before, there was a certain amount of optimism in the air and a certain amount of excitement around diversity and the expanding of diverse voices in mainstream spaces, especially that this brought about with all of the great performers of color that it kind of brought to prominence, Lin-Manuel Miranda among them. And since then, I think watching it, especially in the last week or so, I saw a lot of what you were talking about addressing the importance of the contributions of immigrants and of people of color to the building of the country from the very beginning and the way that it is right now currently, and kind of realigning ourselves with that, like saying, this is what it could be if we are at our best. Where are we right now? Mm-hmm. And kind of refocusing the lens on what we could be doing differently, how we could try to live into those ideals and what's possible when we do.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all kind of theoretical stuff. Let's get back to the practical. Did you have a favorite moment while watching Hamilton? Maybe one that either amplified one of your favorite moments from listening to the soundtrack ahead of time, or maybe something that surprised you as just the visual element that you were getting to enjoy.
Something that kind of surprised me, and I imagine that this would probably be present for me upon listening to the soundtrack again, but something that surprised me upon watching it was the character of Aaron Burr and his relationship to Hamilton. I'm a big fan of the film Amadeus, and I saw some really strong parallels there.
Yes.
Where you see Burr as kind of the frustrated Salieri who is skilled, but maybe not quite as skilled as Hamilton, who, like Mozart, is just like, it's effortless for him. It's just nothing but success from the word go,
right,
and nothing but ambition from the word go. And Burr has that ambition, but then there's that song Wait For It, where you get his entire ethos. And I think Leslie Odom Jr.'s performance really comes through in the visual aspect, where you get sort of what his frustration is there and why he's so frustrated with Hamilton and why they're such fundamentally different people.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is there in the song, but something about seeing Leslie Odom Jr. on screen as well and just the cinematic elements that the filming brings to it, I thought of Amadeus this time as well. And it didn't occur to me so much when I was listening to the soundtrack prior to this. So I think that's there. For me, I think one of the highlights is the wedding sequence, where there are some cinematic tricks being pulled here too. There's a flashback involved. It involves both Satisfied and then brings us back to a previous song, Helpless. And we kind of move about in time and space the way a movie would. But you can see how there's this circular part of the stage, this rotating part of the stage that moves back and forth as well. That is a production design element that they're employing to move us. And that was just really kind of magical to see that all come together, in addition to, you know, the great performances, the great singing that you're getting from the cast as well. So yeah, it was a thrill to get to experience Hamilton for me as well over 4th of July. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on about it, Abby, before we go?
My favorite parts of the soundtrack have always been the King George bits, because I liked the song quite a bit.
Yeah.
Seeing Jonathan Groff's performance was both fun and surprising. There was a lot of moisture in that performance that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, I think that, especially when we're all kind of trying to be careful of, you know, keeping our distance and keeping such things to ourselves, it was maybe a little more jarring than usual. But I do think it also speaks to, like, not only the commitment he brings to that role as the king, but the fun he is having with that part, and kind of letting the audience in on the fun too. You know, he's giving little winks to the crowd, and hearing the crowd respond again kind of amplifies that. So yeah, that was a highlight to Groff's couple of scenes. Well, thank you so much, Abby, for coming on the podcast. I hope you're finding ways to still enjoy summer in this most unusual year, and we'll try to have you back on the podcast before summer's over, okay?
All right. Thanks, Josh.
Number one, the challenge demands satisfaction. If they apologize, no need for further action.
Number two,
if they don't, grab a friend, that's your second.
Your lieutenant, when there's reckoning to be reckoned.
Number three,
have your seconds meet face to face.
Negotiate a peace or negotiate a time and place.
This is commonplace, especially between recruits.
Most disputes die and no one shoots. Number four,
if they don't reach a peace, that's all right. Time to get some pistols and the
That was the original cast of the smash hit Broadway musical Hamilton with 10 dual commandments. And if you happen to live in my neighborhood in East Nashville, you would have heard that song blasting out of our backyard on the 4th of July this year. We set up a big screen and a projector in our backyard and used my daughter's Disney Plus subscription to watch this once completely inaccessible musical drive-in movie style. As hundreds of fireworks were set off all around our house, the sound of explosions going off in all directions and the smell of black powder drifting through the air, and Lin-Manuel Miranda and company delivering their explosive story of the American Revolution and how it played out for a particular cast of characters, it was quite an experience. Hello, I'm John J. Thompson, and you can hear that whole song, along with more than 25 others, on a special playlist I have curated for this episode of the Think Christian podcast. Rock, folk, gospel, soul, country, alternative, and punk artists have been wrestling for many years with the complicated relationship many of us have with our nation. Where's the line between patriotism and idolatry, for instance? When does love of country become nationalism? Is it possible, even desirable, for us to respect our leaders while we critique them? Can we pray for our country and demand better of it at the same time? Songwriters have been grappling with these questions for a long time, and this playlist is just the tip of the socio-theological musical iceberg. You'll find songs by Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Underworld, The Offspring, Propaganda, and a brand new track from Old Crow Medicine Show, a classic from Simon and Garfunkel, and a brand new 12.5-minute song from Sufjan Stevens that you will hear a little bit later in the show. To listen along, just search for the Think Christian profile on Spotify and click follow. This episode's playlist will be listed as the latest episode for a while and then listed as its own mix separately forevermore. And you can hear all of the mixes I've curated for the podcast there either individually or you can hear them gathered together in the archive list as well. You can also find links in the emails you get from us or at thinkchristian.net. And if there are any songs that have helped you think through the issues of praying for America, tweet at me at John J. Thompson, and I might add them to the mix as well. That's it for now. Until next time, this is John J. Thompson, hoping your summer is full of love and grace and that all of your fingers are still attached to your hands.
Time to talk comic books, which means it's time to talk to J.R. Forasteros. J.R., we've previously discussed X-Men comics on the show, as well as Aquaman. This time, it's Captain America's turn. Tell me about this latest run of the iconic character, and maybe tell me a little bit about the creative voices that are behind it.
Yeah, so this newest run, which is, at time of recording, 20 issues in, is from Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is sort of rose to prominence at The Atlantic as a voice talking a lot about race. I know the first time I was exposed to him was his brilliant article called The Case for Reparations. Until he left, I think a couple of years ago now, he was consistently writing on race. Now he has a novel out called The Water Dancer, which is about Black people during the antebellum time working to liberate other Black people from slavery. He's really prolific, really thoughtful about race. So when it was announced that this guy was going to write Captain America, like it was amazing. I mean, he had previously made waves because his first stab at writing comics was Black Panther.
Right.
But then, you know, for a lot of pretty obvious reasons, when it was announced that he was going to not only continue Black Panther, but then take on Captain America himself, it made a lot of headlines.
Sure.
And people were really curious to see what it was going to be like for this person who was in many ways leading the national conversation on dealing with the continuing legacy of slavery to write literally the embodiment of the American flag, right? As a comic book character.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Coates has long loved comics. He's a Marvel nerd. So it's not like these were new characters or anything to him. But yeah, I don't know that anyone knew exactly what to expect from his take on Steve Rogers.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming, Jerry, you've read other runs of the Captain America comic. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think probably before this run, the most famous run in recent memory was Ed Brubaker's run, where he created the character Winter Soldier, which was bringing Steve Rogers' old sidekick Bucky back, which, of course, now anyone who's seen the Marvel movies knows that whole
major, you know, character arc, there. Yeah,
that was all brand new. You know, Steve Rogers throughout the comics is giving up the shield, or he's losing the mantle of Captain America, or he's passing it on to someone else and reclaiming it. So a lot of the things that we see in Coates' run aren't necessarily brand new ideas for anyone who's read the comics for a long time. But I think for me, what really made this run different is that it followed in the wake of one of the big Marvel events called Secret Empire, where a clone of Steve Rogers turned out to be a part of Hydra. Basically, they're the Nazis, right? They're led mostly by Red Skull and, you know, the heirs of the Nazi Empire. They took over America, and a Hydra Captain America was at the forefront of them. And so after that whole event was dealt with, and you found out that the Nazi Captain America was not the real Captain America, you have Steve now stepping back into the spotlight and reclaiming the mantle of Captain America. But the challenge is that we now live in a world where people don't trust the media. Mm-hmm. They don't trust those in authority. And so a lot of America in the comic doesn't believe that Steve was not that Steve.
Right.
They no longer trust the symbol of Captain America. And I think that's a different thing that we haven't really seen in the comics before. You know, there have been times that Steve has lost faith in himself. There have been times that Steve has lost faith in the government. But there's never been a time when the comic has tried to grapple with this large public lack of trust in the institution of America as embodied in Captain America.
Yeah, and so there's like conspiracies at work here. There's also a nationalistic thread that's running through these comics. And there was a really striking image in the first issue that captured this for me so well. At this point, Cap is taking on this cyborg, I guess you could call it an ultra-nationalist militia. And these cyborgs, who basically look like bulked up G.I. Joe soldiers from the old cartoons, they have these face tattoos of the American flag. And right away in that first issue, that image jumped out at me because it captured how, specifically in this moment, but really, you know, sometimes at large, society at large, persona and country can become one. They're indistinguishable, right? We can't separate ourselves from being citizens of, in this case, the United States. And, you know, I think as Christians, in a nation that's been predominantly defined by Christian tradition, I think obviously that's shifted significantly in recent decades, but for most of the nation's history, I think it can be tempting to let something like that happen to us, how we can be tempted to merge our identity as Christians with our identity as American citizens. And we should probably point out, it's a very specific understanding often of what it means to be an American citizen when that happens. I'm curious if any, we've talked about Coates and his contribution as writer, but did any images like that jump out at you, JR?
Again, I think the images that, again, Joe references this in his article, but from that 13th issue where Cap is down at the border and you see all of those images of, you know, people that are technically considered illegals. And then when you see Cap in this sort of moral quandary of, do I defend these people who are breaking the law or not or whatever? And then when he actually gets rebuked by a Latina superhero and then stands for these people that, again, are technically considered illegal, I think that image was really, really powerful for me. Because again, I think what that got at for me was what's always been at the heart of Steve Rogers, which is that the country that he embodies is never perfect. And so what he's dedicating himself to is never the reality on the ground, but the ideal that lives in, you know, hearts and minds.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that was a very patriotic moment, you know, where he takes this stand for people that aren't considered citizens, right? And that he's literally like quoting the Statue of Liberty, like as he's, you know, the poem on the Statue of Liberty. So I thought those images were powerful for me because they said so much about who he is and how he understands himself to be Captain America by showing visually, like literally what side he's choosing to stand on.
Yeah.
And who he's choosing to stand with, you know?
And as we're mentioning some of the imagery at work here, probably worth noting that the comic book artist who had a lot to do with this is Lenil Yu. So not exactly sure if he was responsible for those face tattoos, which were so striking to me, but yeah, definitely had a hand in some of the work here. And you also mentioned Joe's article, that's Joe George, who is writing about this run of Captain America for Think Christian. That'll be live on the site by the time that this episode airs. There was another key moment for me, JR, that I wanted to bring up, and this came in issue number 7. And this is where it's speaking to some of this conflict that Rogers is feeling within himself, you're talking about, and who he's going to represent and how, what ideas he's going to represent. he's been struggling with that throughout this series, throughout this run. And Sharon Carter here is talking to him really about the forces at work within the government that are speaking to an American ideal or to the ideals, but then betraying them in practice. And he's trying to wrap his head around that. And what she tells him is, you don't serve a government, you serve a country. And I think that distinction is maybe helpful when we think about drawing that line between our faith and our citizenship too. I'm sure you've heard, JR, sometimes Christians who are, you know, touting blind allegiance to the government will quote Jesus' comment about rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's, or Paul's admonition in Romans to be subject to the governing authorities. But really, I don't know that either of those are meant to come at the expense of our faith, you know, to take precedence over our faith. And so as Christians, we can be law-abiding citizens of a country, but we don't have to be mindless followers of a government. And maybe especially if that government is inflicting injustice or inflicting oppression, that goes against our greater status as members of the kingdom of God. So I don't know if you think that's a fair equation to make, JR, between Cap's situation and ours as American Christians.
And I think the two scriptures you cite are especially poignant there, because Jesus' words begin with the question about paying taxes, right? And the language that Jesus uses is, whose image is on the coin? And then they say Caesar. And so he says, well, you give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. The implication then is that, you know, if it has Caesar's image, you give it to Caesar. Well, the unspoken parallel is, well, you give to God what has God's image on it. And of course, we know from Genesis 1 that humanity is the bearer of God's image. And so if we see our Caesars denying God's image in other people, we have an obligation to name that as evil and to work against it. I think with Paul in Romans 13, it always makes me giggle when people quote that, because I say, you know, that Paul's talking about the government that killed the guy that he calls his Lord, right? Paul knows that Jesus was killed by Rome. And so all of what he's saying is bracketed by what he says just before that, where he says, don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Then he goes right into talking about submitting to the governing authorities, which again, we understand is that's what Jesus did, right? By giving himself over to Rome, he overcame the evil of Rome with his good self-sacrifice. So I think it's problematic when we give, as you said, blind allegiance to a particular incarnation of a government, because everyone's now seen Hamilton a few hundred times, right? And so we can look at that and recognize that the thing that is the most familiar to us in that is the stuff that's the most anachronistic, which is the raps, right? The way they govern looks nothing like the way we govern today, because our government has changed so much over the last 200 years. Our government is always a particular incarnation of an idea. Because of that, it's flawed, it's fallible, you know, often sinful to different degrees. And so the idea that those of us who follow Jesus and claim him as our Lord would give blind allegiance to any human institution should be troubling, you know? And yeah, I do think that the way we see Steve Rogers grappling with what it means to be Captain America in this run of comics, and even the fact that he doesn't himself feel worthy of his shield, is really, really important, you know?
Yep, the use of the shield is interesting throughout this run so far, is when he has it, when he holds it, how he wields it. That's kind of a recurring motif as well. Is there anything else within the run that stood out to you that you wanted to be sure to touch on or talk about?
I just want to echo what Joe said in his article, which everyone should definitely go read if you haven't yet. I love the idea that what Steve is dedicated to is the dream, you know, and in many ways, his whole life since World War II has been about fighting to make that dream a reality. And I think that is a way for all of us who want to love our countries and also be honest about the failings and the sins of our country, to balance those two things, to say that what I love is the dream. And because I love the dream and because I believe in the dream, I will be the loudest spokesperson calling out where I don't measure up or where we don't measure up. It's not out of a spirit of condemnation or criticism. It's out of a spirit of love. And honestly, I think as Christians called to speak truth to power, that's what speaking truth to power looks like. We don't do it to condemn. We don't do it to hate. We do it because we love and we believe in what could be.
So remind me, JR, you mentioned there's about 20 issues that are available now. This run will, it's on a little bit of a pause, but picks up again in August. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think actually Coates is, I believe if I remember correctly, he's rotating off after issue 25.
Okay.
So it's going to be a pretty solid ending to the story that he's telling.
Yeah. I look forward, especially to those last couple of issues that come from him. And as we've mentioned a couple of times, Joe George's article on this Captain America run is at thinkchristian.net. You can also find on the TC website another piece written by Vincent Baycoat on Coates' Black Panther, which that run was around 2016. So we did write about it then. Vincent Baycoat has some thoughts. So check those articles out for more comic book talk at thinkchristian.net. Thanks, JR, for sharing your thoughts on Captain America. Take care, okay?
Josh, always a pleasure.
Sufjan Stevens wrestling with his own tortured relationship with his country there in the appropriately titled America. That's the first single from his forthcoming album, The Ascension. Like that album's title indicates, the song's rife with Christian allusions and spiritual longing. That's something you'll find in so much of Sufjan Stevens' work. Now, if he sounds like he's given up on the American experiment, should we? How can we be both citizens of a nation and members of God's kingdom? That's a kingdom modeled on Jesus that is one of justice and mercy, peace and forgiveness, made available to all people. Even though the Declaration of Independence values similar things, it speaks of humankind being created equal, inalienable rights, has a sense of basic dignity, we still have a hard time reconciling faith and country. I'm grateful for works like Hamilton and Ta-Nehisi Coates' Captain America for helping us think about how we might start doing that. I'm also thankful to Abby Olchesi and J.R. Forresteros for coming on the podcast to do the same thing. Find them on Twitter. Abby is at Abby Olchesi, A-B-B-Y-O-L-C-E-S-E, and J.R. is at J.R. Forresteros. Now, John J. Thompson, of course, has curated yet another robust Spotify playlist for this episode. You'll get some Hamilton there, some Sufjan, and a bunch more. You can search for the Think Christian playlist on Spotify to find that. Thank you to those of you who have found us on YouTube, where we're now posting video versions of the podcast. Check that out if you haven't already. And really, no matter how you're listening, we do appreciate your support. If you Apple Podcasts listeners want to leave a review of the show, that would be great. I've already mentioned a couple of TC articles related to this episode you might want to check out. I should add Ryan Guerra's new piece, Hamilton's Challenge for Christians in 2020. Make sure you don't miss out on any of our articles by subscribing for our emails at thinkchristian.net/subscribe. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Basselin. Thanks so much for listening. We'll get together again soon to consider how another aspect of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith.